irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Greetings to all of you listening around the world, and a warm welcome as we bring you another edition of the Answers for the Family radio show. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and each week this show will address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and many things that will improve our mental and physical health. Now, having over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, I've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields and skilled authors who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. Now, for all of you out there, I'm looking for some show ambassadors who will forward at least one of our shows to your social media group and to someone that you know that can benefit from a particular show. Now, the show that we have today, I think this is one that everybody can benefit from. Now, I want everybody to know that if you can do this, we truly appreciate it. And this is just another way that we, as a group, can make a positive difference in the lives of others. Now, our topic today is the effects of screen time on our brain. And I say this as I am in a radio station looking at a giant screen. So I want everybody to know I personally watched our guest's presentation on this subject and immediately felt that this was valuable information that needed to not only get out to you, our listeners, but to every person with a TV, computer, or a smartphone, which is pretty much everybody in the industrialized world. So pass this show on to your loved ones. Now, returning to discuss this and more is Britton Devereaux. And as one of the founders of DeMore Healthcare, she addresses concepts around scarcity, process addiction, comorbidity, and healthcare in the terms of long-term needs. A graduate of Canyon State University and Arizona State University alumnus, Britton is committed to create better healthcare standards. Now, with experience working as a clinical supervisor and managing director, she ensures patients are treated with dignity and that the services provided focus on positive reinforcement and what she refers to as gracious redundancy. Britton, welcome back to Answers for the Family.
Good morning, Alan. Good morning, everybody. Glad to be with you.
Well, it is great to have you back. You know, I know that you keep very busy. It's always more fun when you can be here in studio, but I'm glad that you could take the time. So on this subject, and as I said in the introduction, after having a chance to watch your presentation, I just felt we need to get this subject out there as quickly as possible. So I think the way to begin would be if you could just please describe the brain process and the damage that's created by the light and the stimuli of the abundance of screens that we all now have in our lives.
Absolutely, Alan. So you ask a great question. So what we know is high-resolution technology, immersive technology, augmented imagery is now the norm for our day-to-day method to communicate, to seek entertainment, to find relief, to engage in recreation or what some would refer to as rest. But what evidence is showing us from neurology and psychiatry, biology, is that the brain is actually stimulated so much from this immersive technology, high-resolution pixel technology, that there is really not much rest that takes place when we utilize screen technology. Screen technology is anything from a gaming instrument, a Fitbit, an iPhone watch, a tablet, a PC, television, of course. We use these tools and they provide an enormous return on the investment. Mm-hmm. The challenge is what they do to our central nervous system, Alan. Mm-hmm. So our central nervous system is two parts. It's our brain and it's our spinal cord. And when we think about screen time technology, there's a stress, a residue, if you will, that it leaves on our day-to-day life. And actually, we're seeing that it's causing people to be less empathetic, utilize critical thinking less, and to be less interpersonally connected, though they feel so connected because we have so many forms of social media, screen time, so many forms of entertainment through the screen. It's kind of a paradox, to be quite honest, Alan.
And you know, I think anybody just needs to see the nightly news to know that everything that you just described is happening. Sad as it may be.
Yeah. When you think about what you're seeing on the news, we see an absence of empathy, right? Mm-hmm. We see the school shootings. We like to politicize these things. But what we really see are traits and dimensions of mental health disorders like antisocial personality disorder, oppositional defiant disorder. We see true psychiatric disorders that can be treated, Alan. And, you know, screens don't have to be eliminated in order for us to treat these DSM-5 endorsed ICD-10 diagnoses. These are very real diagnoses, according to the ATA and AMA.
Now, when you bring that up, I mean, it immediately, Brittany, it makes me think that, I mean, so how does your work in dealing with mental health and addiction address the stress that Americans are feeling during a specific or an average day with screens? Because, I mean, I love the fact that we're going into this subject, but I also know that, you know, what you do a lot of is you're dealing directly with people that are struggling with either mental health or addiction issues. How is this compounding the problem, and how are you able to use this technology to help create some way of getting through those problems?
Thank you for that question, Alan. The challenge that we see in our mental health care facilities is that patients are more and more complex. This is not changing. So you and I and our patients can have more fast, visible, attractive, catchy, insistent, unique, efficient, shiny, irresistible, thin, whatever it is, technology. We can have all those devices, as I just described, but we can still have these increasing mental health disorders, and up to and including substance use disorders, behavioral disorders like shopping, pornography, gambling, and we would now even include things like internet. So in our facilities, we're treating individuals that have a complex presentation. In other words, they have more than one diagnosis, and oftentimes their diagnosis is something physical as well. So you'll see a patient that's suffering from bipolar disorder with psychotic features, also a secondary opioid use disorder. They suffer from back and neck problems, and they also suffer from diabetes. So take a look at that patient and lifestyle changes related. Behavioral treatment, for example, my question to a patient is the last thing.
Okay. Unfortunately, I think we're having some technical difficulties. And so if our engineer is listening, is that something?
How's this, Alan?
Okay, now this is much better again. So, but for a moment there, I think in the middle of that answer, we started to lose you. So it may have been sunspots, or you know what? It may be that it's GPS signals that are out there, knowing that we're trying to tell people to stop watching these things, and they're sending GPS signals to mess up our transmission, folks. That's what it is. It's a conspiracy. And if you don't believe me, just watch the news. Somebody will take it.
I'll back up a bit, Alan. I apologize for that. The challenge when you're looking at a complex presentation in terms of psychiatry is that, you know, oftentimes a patient may want everything to be reduced into a simple diagnosis, but really we can change some things just in lifestyle. So when's the last time that somebody uses a screen before they attempt to go to sleep?
Mm-hmm.
When's the last time an individual had things like sugar or tobacco or caffeine before they tried to go to sleep. And we know that a lot of the battle can be resolved if we resolve the circadian rhythm. So in our mental health care facilities, we focus quite well in pinpointing things that we can do to improve the circadian rhythm as we address mental health disorders. See, you also asked me a little bit about what we do in terms of how we help individuals regulate or maintain mood, mm-hmm. and rather really regulation in general in terms of lifestyle. So when you look at the news, we can see that our lifestyles in the U.S. are dysregulated. In other words, we are utilizing maladaptive behaviors in order to manage outcomes that we think are desirable. Maladaptive behaviors look like, I desire to feel pleasure, so I will use an opiate. Mm-hmm. Maladaptive behavior, I need to feel connected, so I'm going to spend 3 continuous hours on social media and the internet. As we rely on these things and less on our critical thinking and our physical abilities, we become reduced to act like the machine, which we were never intended to be.
See, I think that's a great point. And what I love is that you're tying in a lot of things to the psychiatric part as well as the medical part, and things that, you know, that nobody's trying to monetize. You're not trying to monetize people getting better sleep or monetize people taking sugar out of their diet. These are things that you can help them with, that once they take care of that, I see it as something that allows you better access to doing the job at hand, which may be, in this case, getting somebody off of opiates. But by handling those other things, it's got to make it easier, and it's got to make it something that maybe has a better chance of sticking, and maybe fewer people are going to fall back into those habits if you've given them good habits that they can stick with. So, which is why
Absolutely.
I just love it. I love it.
When you describe that, what I think of is the statement that I use lots of times with patients and with staff. I call it digital hamster optional. In other words, if we can accomplish something interpersonally before we rely on a screen or a device to accomplish it for us, let's do it interpersonally. Mm-hmm. Let's do it face-to-face. It's difficult, right? As you and I sit in different places in the world, and yet we're talking about the same issue together. We're united because of technology, and so that's a by necessity today. Mm-hmm. But there are times where things are not by necessity, it's by what we believe to be ease. And so often, what we believe ease will do for us actually cripples us and paralyzes things like critical thinking, like relationships, like mental health status, like the ability to have your spine exercised all the way to its longest length because all the vertebrae are in place. We're in our tech neck society, because we're looking so often down at our technology, our spine is carrying so much weight and it's holding extra weight forward that doesn't need to be. So there's a lot of things that we do that we think are creating ease for us, but in the long run, they're going to create challenge or even pain.
Right. And that's one of the things, and again, as I had mentioned in the very beginning, as far as the introduction of one of the things that I like is that you're looking at the long term. You know, it's, you know, what's the long game here? You know, not a, okay, short term, let's get them away from this particular drug or whatever, but what's the long term that's going to help them over a much greater period of time, or hopefully for the rest of their life. So, yeah, it makes perfect sense. Now, the other thing that I remember, again, from your presentation that I thought that would be good for especially a lot of the professionals to know is that this is a subject that both neurologists that are much more on the, you know, on the more physical side, and psychiatrists much more on the mental side, there's many things that they're finding and agreeing on. And I think that that's really important. So, I mean, share some of the things that they agree on in regards to how screen time is affecting all of us.
Absolutely. So you're right about that. So what we're seeing is neurologists and psychiatrists are both seeing the same neuropathological trends and neurological trends in physiological studies of the brain. So just a quick analogy. So when you think of a head of hair, you think you want really thick hair. It's the same thing with the brain. You want height. You want it to be thick. You want density. You want volume. And what psychiatrists and neurologists are seeing is that volume or density in our white matter and our gray matter of our brain is actually decreasing with increased screen time exposure. So the more we use and rely on games and the more we stare at a screen without interruption, it's actually taking something away from the brain. Mm-hmm. So neurologists and psychiatrists don't go too heavy into the solution. That's what organizations like the Amori Healthcare exist for, is we want to bring solution around that. But they are reporting great science to us about what we're seeing as commonalities between substance addiction and behavior addictions. And there's a lot of commonality in how we can address both of those, not just through medication and therapy, but also through lifestyle.
Well, then, so then the question would be, what do you do about it professionally? And what are some of the things that every human being can do to help prevent this?
Sure. So the first thing as far as prevention, I love that question. That's where my heart is in the preventative measures, is thinking about how you build an average day. How many things do we tend to desire delivery from a screen? I don't know if you're getting feedback, Alan, but I am.
No, but I know that can be difficult. Every once in a while when we do get it, it usually dissipates. So,
okay. So if we desire delivery from a screen, we tend to avoid using tactile tools like a book or maybe a board game. So the more that we desire delivery and pursue that delivery, we, our brain and our habits tend to follow that same pattern. So if I created it once, I'm more likely to do it again. So if, let's say I'm reading a book, and I read it every morning from my screen. I read for 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Our brain starts to normalize to that behavior, and it's going to be more difficult when we try to interrupt that pattern and start reading a book from an actual textbook, from an actual hard copy book. So those are just basic things, nuanced things that we want to look at with patients and with individuals that are noticing this heightened amount of stress and dysregulation where they just can't calm down, where anxiety reigns and rules in their day-to-day, and where interpersonal relationships are becoming harder and harder to maintain with satisfaction, with pleasure. So just basic lifestyle questions like, are you reading from a book or are you reading from a screen? Another thing, how often do you plan your day around a person or around the technology? So we know that we tend to rely on a lot of tools in any given day. But as I mentioned earlier, where we can replace a tool with a person just for the interpersonal exchange, we try to suggest that off the day. So in an hour workday, that's entirely possible. By no means do we suggest that we should pass up on using tablets or screens or PCs or television. They're necessary. We need them. But the idea is, let's not overlook the benefits of human connection. We were made to be social animals. Let's use that part of our human nature. Let's rely on that, because we get a lot more done when we recognize how we were made and what we were made for, rather than pretending that our tech neck or our spine can handle this kind of challenge, that our brain can withstand this kind of pressure and stress that high-resolution immersive technology brings us.
Yeah, I know. I mean, as someone who's recently been studying the brain for a variety of reasons, you know, I've learned that the neuromechanics of the brains are of the brain is incredibly complex, and we're constantly learning more. Every time I learn something, I realize that 6 months later, okay, there's something completely new now to learn. But some are referring to the screens, you know, as a behavioral addiction, in the same way that we would have any other type of, be it a drug addiction or a gambling addiction. Do you agree with that, and why is that?
That you're smart to be researching the brain. I think lots of times we expect our body to just operate for us without knowing much about our body. So I always encourage education and awareness. So I think that's smart on your part. Nevertheless, the neural mechanics of the brain in its complexity is a little bit, for me, a hobby, because there's so much to learn that we can continue to unfold and unfold. And then in 10 years, we'll learn something new. And that's the exciting part of how this brain was created. It's so complex. So as I'm learning, or as you're learning, one thing I would introduce is exactly what you said. Consider behavioral addiction something that can be prevented. Not only that, but it can be intervened on, to your last question. So when you think about the neuromechanics of the brain, imagine that you have a massive system with many folds and intricacies within it. And this massive system can actually be subdued or slowed by some of the behavior patterns that we're creating. So if one of those behavior patterns is that I check my phone 36 times an hour, the new U.S. average, if I check my phone 36 times an hour, my brain starts to predict that I'm going to do that again and again and again. And with that comes tech neck, where my spine and my neck suffer, my stress, my pancreas, right? I'm producing insulin. Our bodies move to a status of complete stress, and we can actually slow that down when you think of having the basic human interaction that we can enjoy in a society like this, especially when you think of California. We are a high population state. There's anything we can do to separate ourselves from a screen at any given point in the day. For example, take 20 seconds to remove your eyes from the screen and focus on something 20 feet or more away. Do that not just for the separation from the screen time, but also to preserve the focal length of your eye.
Wow. Now, I've read a little bit about these, I guess, I know they're blue blockers or something, but they're the yellow glasses that people are starting to wear indoors when they're working on a computer, you know, 8 hours a day. Is this something that is helpful? Is this a new fad, or do you know?
No, Ellen, I don't know as much about the lenses as I do about the benefit of placing something over your eye or over your screen intermittently. Again, to interrupt that behavioral addiction that it becomes, because we can go online, we can go on social media, and at any moment we can have a change, right? And then our body starts to depend on this change and on this interrupted kind of pattern, and it becomes addictive, that we get dopamine given to us every time we achieve an end. So there's a lot of ease in working with social media and then the internet. But what we know is that human beings were built for hardship. We were built for challenge. That's how our brain was crafted in its complexity. So I really know more about that side of it than I do about the eye, except for that pause that I take and that I suggest patients take. Look at something for 20 seconds or more, for 20 feet or more, every 20 minutes that you're using a screen. That should help both prevent the behavior from perpetuating, and also should help the focal length and also help the anxiety.
Well, if you're just tuning in, we are speaking with Britton Devereaux. She is co-founder of DeMore Healthcare. We are talking about the effects of screen time on your brain. So we're going to take a break. During this break, you don't have to look at a screen. Just listen and be back with us in about a minute. Take care.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis. Westshield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service, licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services and Westshield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And we're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family, and we're talking about the effects of screen time on your brain. With us is Britton Devereaux. And Britton, we have a listener question that is coming in. This one reads, every restaurant I go into, I can't help but noticing the entire room buried in their devices. It is most alarming to see parents with their young children doing this as well, and hardly speaking to each other. As an elementary school teacher, I find that my students are more hyperactive and less interactive. It is as if they are in these own little bubbles and are just becoming so disconnected through technology that we will not find our way back to normal human interactions. What are your thoughts on this? And this is from Allison in Utah.
Allison, I agree 100% with your observation. And I will also say, guilty as charged. I have been in the restaurant with my nephews, and I've noticed if I pull my screen out to check an email or a text or make a call, they suddenly want a screen too. And so what I learned in my research and in my interaction over time is we are modeling heavily dysfunctional, dysregulated, maladaptive behaviors to our youth. And as I said earlier, digital hamster optional, right? So it's optional for the youth too. When Alan mentioned before the research related to neurologists and psychiatrists, I want to add to that, it's not just bipolar disorder, generalized anxiety disorder, antisocial personality disorder, depression, but it's also attention deficit and hyperactivity, right? So the brain is sort of telling us, it's giving us a message that it's too much. This screen time is too much. So when we're at dinner, there's basic lifestyle decisions that we can make. The screens stay in the car, the tablet included. So the pacifier or the babysitter that the screen can sometimes be for us is optional. Digital hamster optional. We don't have to use that as the resource to help children sit through dinner. We, the human being, are the resource to help train and support and give empathy and tools to our children, to the next generation. So a lot of that goes back to critical thinking. If we're thinking and planning in advance and we're proactive before we get to the restaurant, one, we might choose a restaurant that has less screens at it in general. For me, I don't like to go to restaurants that has 3, 4, 5, 6 screens around it. I like a quiet place. So if we want to start challenging our behavioral normatives in terms of our youth and in terms of our relationship patterns, I would suggest let's look at what venue we go to, and may it have an absence of screens itself, televisions and whatnot. The other side to your question is these disorders that I'm mentioning, bipolar disorder, depression, anxiety, ADHD, personality disorders, they need empathy. They do not need the projection of perfect. They don't need the screen world. They need the real world. There's a big difference. And they don't need the lights that stimulate the central nervous system into more stress. As I said before, we're social animals and we need interpersonal empathy. When we get empathy from a screen, oftentimes one can only imagine whether it was real, whether it was informed, whether it was genuine, whether it will be enduring. And it's our role over things like mealtime to demonstrate these things to youth and to ourselves. As I said, guilty as charged, I've learned this one, not just through research, but by trying and living what I suggest to patients and their families.
Yeah, as you were saying that, I was visualizing, I was thinking, okay, so for everybody out there that's listening, that's working in one of these companies that has a whole bunch of cubicles and you're all looking at your work screen, get up and walk around the cubicle and say hi to the person on the other side of that little wall.
That's right.
You know, and I know that there are a few teachers that have talked about the fact that they've actually listened to the show in their classroom because they thought it was good for their kids. Hey, first of all, we appreciate you doing that. And secondly, for all you kids out there, turn around to the person on the desk behind you and say hi to them. You know, let's work on the interpersonal communication. You know, having three friends right there in your classroom is going to be far more important than having 30,000 friends on some social media site.
What you just described, Alan, will produce dopamine for anybody that does it right now. I just want to back that up.
All right.
Anybody that decides to do that, there is a dopamine charge that you're going to get. In other words, you're going to get a benefit from doing what's good for your body and your brain.
So, and share for everybody a little bit about what dopamine is and what it does for your body.
So our dopamine is produced in our brain, basically as we engage in behaviors that our body was meant to enjoy for pleasure. So the insula, the nucleus accumbens, and then both sides of the brain really have a lot to do with the production of dopamine. So you think about the right side of the brain, the left side of the brain, am I more creative, am I more analytical? You know, you get dopamine from engaging in both behaviors, right side behavior and left side. One quick way to get a dopamine charge and to start to heal from screen time, the behavioral addiction or the stress related to screen time, or just a quick interruption, as I mentioned, the 20-20-20 interruption, is you want to engage in right brain activity. So take Alan's advice one step further and open up a box and start a puzzle and just put three pieces in the right place. Or decide that you're going to do something that requires dexterity and retie your shoelaces, but this time do it a different way. These basic things actually produce dopamine for us because we're using the skills that we were born with, born to use. And not only that, dopamine helps us with the stress response. We know that irritability, mood swings, the inability to self-soothe or to calm down, these things happen over time when there's an absence of dopamine, or if there's a substance use disorder or a behavioral disorder like a behavioral addiction like pornography or gambling. The self-soothing actually helps us avoid the same repetitive and redundant behavior. It actually helps us choose something that's sustainable rather than choosing something non-sustainable. So, for example, it's not sustainable to be reliant on heroin or methamphetamine. It is sustainable to engage in a human relationship or to engage in reading a book or starting a puzzle. And it sounds trite to reduce things down to such basic behaviors, but those are actually the ways that we heal, Alan.
Oh, yeah. No, I completely agree. There was a study out there that says that the person receiving the words, I like you or I love you, gets a dopamine fix. So you want to make somebody happy and you like them, tell them. They're going to get a dopamine fix. If you have someone that you love, tell them. They're going to have a dopamine fix. What better gift can you give them? You know, so, you know.
That's right.
Yeah, so, yeah, it's.
Dopamine is something that we all rely on. And when we use substances or when we engage in a behavioral addiction, actually dopamine can be created in such pools that it actually floods us and we can't get its benefit. So we can get so much of something that we think we need it or want it, and then we never actually get the benefit. Much like the paradox that I was talking about earlier with ease. We can think we've got so much ease now in our highly technologically driven society, but we don't have less stress, and we have more disconnection, not more connection. So you bring up some really important points.
Now, and you just made a good point about the fact that we can actually get so much of it and yet not be able to use it. And so are these more, I mean, when somebody's in more of an addictive state to where for a while they're getting it and it's helping them, but they get to a point to where it's just not affecting them anymore?
Yeah, it's going to have a reduced impact. And in fact, an amount of activity would be required that one can't actually sustain, much like substance use. Mm-hmm. Right? So you're gonna develop a tolerance, and in fact, even screen time, you develop a tolerance to it, and then you develop withdrawals, right? The irritability, the mood swings, the anxiety, the panic, the fear, the insecurity of whether or not one is accepted by other human beings. So, yeah, it's quite complex when you think about what we've created in this restlessness. And I've read from Adam Alter, it's actually called the restlessness between hits. In other words, I can get a hit when I go on Facebook. I get a hit when I go on to Instagram. I get a hit when I check my email and then when I reply to text and get a text back right away. These hits create a restlessness because we want more and more of the same thing. And what I call that time in space while we're waiting is the fear of echo. That time and space where we're waiting for a response, that echo, the absence of eye contact, the absence of touch, the absence of tenderness, the absence of feedback, the absence of somebody telling us that we're enough or we're good or, as you said, I like you. It's a hollow sound and it's scary for most Americans. It's scary because we have such a high amount of immersive technology, augmented reality, that's changing the way we think and what we expect from one another. And not only that, how much we expect from them in a given period of time, say 5 minutes or say an hour.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
When you think about the digital hamster concept, I want you to imagine that hamster doesn't know when to get off, right? Does not know when to take itself off of its own treadmill or roller coaster of sorts, right? And what we need is moments like this on a Monday or any day of the week where we can say, this is optional. I don't have to have this synthetic machine or piece, this device that has control over me, my opinion of myself, and my opinion of others. And we're going to see moments like this continue in history. We saw it when the fat-free campaign started, mm-hmm. right? You had 8 U.S. senators that died of heart disease in the 60s and 70s. And so we started replacing fatty meat and carbohydrates, pasta, potatoes. We started replacing it all and saying, no fat, only carbohydrates, right? And it was called the McGovern Report. Well, today, what you and I are talking about is not a new McGovern Report where we eliminate fat or we eliminate screens. What we're told now is to just eat intuitively, eat sensibly. Mm-hmm. And that's what I say from a behavior perspective, from a mental health perspective, from a lifestyle perspective, is live intuitively, live sensibly. In other words, we're not meant to live with another appendage, the screen. We were meant to use it, but not need it as an appendage. Does that make sense, Alan?
Absolutely. And we want to use it and we don't want it to use us. And also what I hear you saying is that we want to stay away from sort of a pendulum effect. When you mentioned the McGovern Report, what we don't realize until it's too late sometimes is the pendulum effect is worse than what you had to begin with. You know, there was this one issue, and all of a sudden we went into this, you know, no fat, low fat, you know, take out meats, replace it with carbs and all of these processed things. And the pendulum effect has given us something much worse than that. And what I hear you saying is that we could have the same thing if we tried to swing, you know, all the way to the other side. You're saying find a balance point in the middle to where we can use it for what it is intended for and what we're going to be able to continue to find great things with it and not let it become something that is a tool that's taking us over.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, we need laptops and TVs and smartphones. We need monitors. We need to be able to go to the baseball game and see that the person in row P, seat 539, proposed to that happy someone in seat 540. We need those things. That's called a life and living in the 21st century. This is not an extremist approach. This is an approach of what can we sustain over time so that we can still have relationships, so we can have coping skills, critical thinking skills, and so we can have peace. We know, as I said earlier, the quality of sleep that a person has such an enormous degree of influence on everything else in their life. And so that's a large part of why the Amore Healthcare started researching screen time and whether or not it really should be classified as a behavioral addiction.
Yeah, I'm smiling, and we're not doing Facebook Live, but it just reminded me to tell everybody we are. When we have in-studio guests, we're doing Facebook Live, so you'd be able to see that I was smiling as Britton was saying that, because I was at the ball game last night, and when you were saying that, I was envisioning the Kiss Cam, because they now have that in every stadium. It's the Kiss Cam, and around the seventh inning, they'll take the cameras and go around, and when they put you up on the screen, people kiss. And we all feel good about it, you know. So, you know, I just think that was such a great analogy.
That's right.
You know, and again, so because we're talking, you've mentioned a little bit about options, and we talked a little bit about balance. So in your mind, I mean, what would be a balanced view of all therapeutic and diagnostic options?
A balanced view is really a lot of folks need to take an assessment of whether or not the screen is running their day and their life and whether or not it's affecting their joy. We at D'Amore have found that high-resolution technology does not help stress level. So one easy way to take a look at an inventory of somebody's stress level is to look at the quality of relationships in their life. So not just number of interactions, but quality, because a lot of people are introverts like me, and they love people, but they need to recharge. And so it's not about the number of relationships, it's about the quality. Mm-hmm. So what I would say is take an inventory by pulling in a couple people that are close to you in your life and ask them, do you feel like I'm a good listener? Do you feel like I'm an active listener? Do I remember things that are important to you? Those three things will give you a great read on the quality of relationships in life if they're willing to be honest with you. And what we found in our inpatient mental health and dual diagnosis facilities is that a lot of individuals, when we tell them that television is only after groups, that's in the evening for about an hour, Alan, or when we've told them that, you know, screen time is something that we monitor and manage because we want to help balance out the neuromechanics and their stress levels and their stress response hormones and the utility of things like epinephrine and norepinephrine and dopamine. And we tell them that screen time is going to be something that they'll have down the road after 15 days of treatment, but just for an hour a day. Usually there's some separation anxiety. And I don't mean, you know, a moment of a deep breath, but some actual fear, Alan. Mm-hmm. So what I would say is translate that into everyday society. And for those of us that travel a lot for business like me, you know, when you put your cell phone and your laptop on the sheet for TSA to take, and it goes through and it the camera takes a look at it, you feel a little bit of separation anxiety like I do. I would say if that's the case, we just have to implement some basic things that there's going to be during the day, 3 waking hours where I don't touch my phone. That's what I started. That can be while you're working out. That could be while you're cooking. That could be while you're eating. And I just started with 3 hours. And my goal is to increase it from there over the next 5 years. Because I know that more technology is going to come out in the next 5 years, but I'm determined for my relationships to always be strong, no matter how much technology is around me.
That makes perfect sense. We have another listener question coming in, and this one reads, I've been reading about blue screen apps for computers and phones, as well as EMF protectors for electrical outlets. Do you know if these work? And if so, should we install them around our home and our family's mobile devices? Would they help with what you are describing? And this is from Joe in Albany, New York.
Thanks, Joe. Yes, I've heard some great things about the blue light technology. And I would say definitely take your time to research the best product because it's all brand new. So make sure that what you invest in is good for your pocketbook.
Makes good sense. Now, in we were talking about habits, and I mean, as most of us have learned, I mean, habits are hard to change. I mean, that's one of the reasons why we're having this conversation. So are you saying that if we don't make some of the adjustments to our screen use, our mental health and our physical health will be impacted? And what are some of the things that we can do? I mean, we've talked about some of the things, but the show is Answers for the Family. So if we're going to set something up for our children and we say, okay, during dinner time, this is going to be the time in which we don't have it. We're now in an age to where even if we don't have them during dinner time, those devices usually go back to their room with them and so on. How do we now deal with this to where, you know, we want to exercise, you know, allow their privacy, but at the same time, we don't necessarily want these in their room. What are some of the things that you've learned that can be helpful so that we can, A, you know, fight the fact that we're creating a habit, but at the same time, if we already have it, how do we then kind of wean ourselves off of it?
Sure, absolutely. Well, Patricia Dunkley is a psychiatrist over at UCLA, and what she recommends, and I agree with 100%, and I've tried it, is what's called the permission phenomenon. So if you're in a family system, let's say that it's 2 parents and 1 child, and the 3 of you agree that you're going to try something new, that you're going to be brave and adventuresome, and you're going to be trailblazers and try something new. And what that something new looks like is that after dinner, we clean up together and we read together or we work together, whatever the case is, but we come up with an algorithm or a formula that we all agree to. For example, if we're watching a television show together, we don't have 2 other screens out. We just have that 1 screen. Mm-hmm. We just have the television. We don't have our smartphones out, our laptop out, our tablet out. So permission phenomenon, Patricia Dunkley described as we're going to let people know what we're doing, and we're going to create a new normal. And so that's just a basic way that we can create less anxiety in our lives and kind of address how desensitized we are, how detached we are, how entitled, temperamental, how apt we are to boredom. The permission phenomenon helps us look at all of those things. The other piece is look at the paradox of your round-the-clock effort. Knowing that stress is not on the decline, what would you do today if you could do one thing to address your stress? And that's different for every person, because not everybody has to have 4 screens in their life or, you know, use 2 screens for most of the day. Some people, they might address their stress by saying, you know what, I'm not going to drink so much caffeine. I'm going to have a little bit less sugar in the last 6 hours of my day or the last 2 hours of my day. These lifestyle changes are small, and much like screen time change, incremental lifestyle changes, those are going to make the lasting difference. Those are the ones that our brain says yes to and our body says yes to, because we don't do well with the pendulum shift. We don't do well with black and white. We do well with incremental status change.
Well, Britton, I want to thank you. And you know, I also want to acknowledge you because, you know, we need more people like you that are out there. You're making a difference. And I just want you to know how much I appreciate and I believe many of our listeners do, because we get feedback. And for those that are just now listening, you've been on the show before. We have gotten feedback. And just the things that you're doing and the things that D'Amore Healthcare are doing to make a better place for all of us. And again, just the fact that you're researching this, whereas, you know, you're the basic business of what you're doing is more mental health and addiction recovery, but at the same time, coming up with all of these other ways in which people can lead a better life. So again, I just want to thank you. And again, for anybody out there, if you want to get a hold of Britton, you can go to their website. It's DAMOREHealthcare.com, which is DAMOREHEALTHCARE.com. For those of you driving, don't try to write that down. Just go to AnswersForTheFamily.com. We will have all of Britton's information there.
Loved my time with you, Alan. Thanks, everybody.
All right. And for everybody out there, please be sure and put us on your calendar to tune in next Monday when our guest will be Danny Sells. He's the National Sales Director of Olive Crest and Safe Families to discuss strengthening families by providing shelter, support, and love for children who have been abused, neglected, or in some cases, victims of unfortunate circumstances. And please visit our archives of past shows at AnswersForTheFamily.com. Or you can subscribe to the show through iTunes or Stitcher or through YouTube. And if you like what you hear, please leave a review. It will help us reach more people, and we will so much appreciate it. And the next time you're on Facebook or Twitter, please remember to stop by our page, check out some of our latest posts. And if you like them, please like us and continue to spread the word. Be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers for the Family.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.